Welcome once again to our program, the 18th in a series on salvation history. The Old Testament, the story of creation, fall, and the beginning of the redemption of humankind. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, chaplain down at the Carmelites, just south of Terre Haute at the entrance of Allendale. Ron, we've been talking about the journey of the Israelites, how they out of Egypt, the Exodus, coming finally. They were fed with manna in the desert and quails that fell on their journey to feed them, water from the rock. They finally got to Mount Sinai, and then they are finally made a covenant with the people, Moses speaking blood on the people from the sacrifice and upon the altar.
Which, of course, seals the covenant.
Seals the covenant. Okay, so this is the covenant that made them chosen people, which we call them, why we even still call Jewish people the chosen people of God.
A nation, what is a holy nation? A nation of priests, I think.
Nation of priests.
The Bible.
Okay, well, now we're up, we finished the Ten Commandments, discussion on them. We're up to the Tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant. There's a famous movie about the Ark of the Covenant, and I don't think there's a whole lot said about the Tabernacle. So can you give us a description of what both of these are about?
Scott Hund tells us that the Ark of the Covenant, I'll quote from him here, was a mirror of the heavenly temple. It would be God's throne on earth, a shadow of his heavenly throne. The God of all creation, who is present everywhere, would dwell in the midst of his chosen people in a way that made them different from every other nation. End of quote. The Ark of the Covenant was a box. And there have been quite a few programs here in the last couple of years on the Tabernacle and on the Ark of the Covenant, especially the Ark of the Covenant. But it was a box, 2.5 cubits in length and 1.5 cubits in height and width, a cubit being about 1.5 feet. I think it was the length from about the middle of the arm down to the end of the tip of the finger, if I remember right. A very common measurement, apparently. Now, of course, that would vary from person to person, so a cubit wasn't always exactly the same length. It was about 4.5 feet by 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet. And so it was a very small box. It was made of acacia wood, very fine wood. And God instructed, you know, he had all these details, dimensions, the materials, everything, how it was to be made, who was to make it, and all that kind of thing. Covered both inside and outside with the purest of gold. It was actually gold foil. You know, gold is very tinsel, and it can be hammered down very, very thin and make a sheet out of it or a foil out of it. And then this foil, of course, was wrapped around the box on the inside and on the outside. And at the four corners, golden rings were placed through which gilded poles were passed, that is, you know, gilded with gold, so that the ark could be carried by the priest. This story is told in Exodus 25. The top of the ark had a cover of pure gold with two angels, two angelic cherubim of beaten gold facing each other. Moses commanded that a golden vessel of manna and the rod of Aaron that blossomed be placed in the ark. And also, of course, the stone tablets containing the Ten Commandments.
Okay. About this time, God also gave Moses some detailed instructions about building a tabernacle. Now, that's not as familiar to most of us as the Ark of the Covenant would be.
No. Everybody's seen Indiana Jones, so they know quite a bit about the Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant.
The Lord not only instructed Moses to build an ark in accordance with his specifications, but he also gave him detailed instructions, specifications on how to build a tabernacle to house the ark, and also to build an altar. This story is told in Exodus 25 through 27. As well as the clothing for the priest, that is their vestments, how they should be consecrated, how the altar of incense should be used, and other liturgical matters. These stories are told in Exodus 28 through 30. The tabernacle was a portable temple that would be God's dwelling place in the midst of his people. The Hebrew word for tent is tabernacle, so that's what it means. Tabernacle equals tent. Upon stopping for the night or for a period of days or months, the Levites, that is the family of Levi, that comes from the tribe of Levi, because they're to become the priest. They haven't been made the priest yet, but they're going to be, as you'll see in our story here, probably in the next session or so. The Levites would install it in the center of the Israelite camp. You have this huge camp, you see, where all these Israelites are camped. Each tribe had its own area. And the tribe of Judah would be in one area. The tribe of Benjamin would be in another area. The tribe all the different family in Judah would be in a different area. And then, of course, right in the middle of this whole camp would be where the place where God himself pitched his tent.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. That's interesting to visualize.
Yes, it was. And the Levites, of course, were encamped around tabernacle. There was a fence-like structure made of fine linen that was put up, and about 150 feet long by 75 feet wide. And it was about 8 feet high, if I recall right, 7-8 feet high. And then within this fence-like structure, they put up the tent.
And in the tent was the white linen curtains.
Yes, the white the curtains. So that pretty well describes the...
Okay, now why was the Ark called the Ark of the Covenant?
The Ark was the place where the Ten Commandments were kept, which were a record carved in stone of God's agreement with the Israelites. In other words, his covenant with the Israelites that we described in the last session.
We could also call it a pact.
Yes.
Or kind of a treaty.
Yes.
But it has a special religious meaning.
A contract.
Another
name for a sacred agreement is covenant or testament. So the Ark was called the Ark of the Covenant because it housed the record of this agreement.
In the Ten Commandments.
Of which the people had agreed on at least three times. And
okay.
And made sacrifices to seal the covenant, because that's how covenants were sealed, you know, in the ancient world, was by some kind of sacrifice.
Well, remind me once again, you mentioned earlier there were other items in the Ark of the Covenant other than the stone tablets of the Ten Commandments and a bowl of manna that had fallen in their journey to feed them in 40 years. What else was in the...
It was Aaron's rod. His staff, which was a symbol of his authority when he was made high priest later on. And there were a number of families, that Levitical families, that challenged his leadership. And so that staff or that rod was a symbol. It was made of an almond tree.
Oh.
And it blossomed.
Oh.
It would have blossoms on it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, obviously was a miraculous thing, and so this rod was kept in the ark for that purpose, to remind the Israelites of the authority of the high priest,
Aaron, and the Levites.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what about the Ark of the Covenant? Has the manna, the Ten Commandments, and the rod of Aaron that had blossomed? I didn't know it was an almond tree. That's interesting. And of course, almond trees do blossom of themselves, but this was a rod that blossomed.
Well, one thing I might add is that the rod prefigured Jesus' high priesthood, because he's going to take the place, of course, of the high priest when the time comes, 1,400 years later. And the golden pot of hidden manna was a memorial to future generations of how God fed them in the wilderness, but also it symbolizes the bread of life from heaven, in other words, the Eucharist.
Okay.
And of course, obviously, the Ten Commandments symbolizes the law of God.
So really, the great memorials of God's dealing with the Jewish people were in there with the priesthood and the bread from heaven and the covenant, the law, the ten words, or the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments.
It symbolized not only the Old Covenant, but the New and Everlasting Covenant, the New Testament as well.
Okay. Well, what about the tabernacle itself, and which you described as a tent? I guess a building to house the Ark of the Covenant.
It did consist of a tent-like structure measuring 45 feet long, 15 feet wide, and 15 feet high. And it was set in the western part of the court, the court being, of course, that where that linen fence was set up 150 feet by about 75 feet, with a great brazen altar of holocaust between it and the entrance to the court. And between the altar and the tabernacle, somewhat to the south, was a brazen basin or bath for the purification of the priest and other prescribed purifications. The tabernacle itself was actually four tents, one on top of the other. Different layers, in other words. The innermost one of beautifully colored and embroidered fine linen, and the outer three ones of various skins sewed together and dyed scarlet and purple. All these were stretched over or hung over a framework of boards, and these boards had to be, you know, certain wood, certain kind of wood, and all that kind of thing. In other words, God gave them the specifications. The tabernacle proper was divided into two rooms. The larger one, a double square, 15 by 30, toward the entrance, and the smaller, a perfect cube of 15 feet in each dimension, separated from the other by a curtain of the same material as the inner tent, some kind of a fine linen. The smaller room was called the Holy of Holies. It was the most sacred place in the world because it was the earthly dwelling place of God himself. In it, the only article of furniture was to be the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant, on the top of the Ark of the Covenant, there were these two cherubim, or golden angels, their wings facing each other. And in the center of that, it was on the lid, was called the Wisdom Seat.
Between the two angels?
Yes, between the two angels.
Okay.
And that's where it was believed that God, that was his throne.
Oh.
That was the place from which God ruled his people. And so he has pitched his tent, so to speak, among them, his tabernacle. Just as we say, we call in our church, we talk about the tabernacle where the Blessed Sacrament is kept. Okay. And I tell my students, this is where Jesus has pitched his tent among us.
And the new manna.
And the new manna,
is contained therein.
He's also the bread from heaven. And the larger room called the sanctuary, sort of like a sacristy, or the holy place, contained the altar of incense in front of the center of the dividing curtain. It also contained a table for the loaves of proposition on the north side. It was set up a certain way facing the east, if I recall right. And the golden candlestick or lampstand on the south that we know as a menorah. The essential form and arrangement was preserved in Solomon and Herod's temples in Jerusalem. In fact, if I recall right, they exactly doubled the sizes of these rooms when they built the temple out of stone, when
really?
Solomon had his temple built
really?
Out of stone. And we'll describe these temples in some detail when we get into some later sessions. But as I said a while ago, that the tabernacle, the tent, was the place where God pitched his tent among the camping Israelites. And as I also said, the tabernacle in our Catholic churches is where Jesus has pitched his tent, that is, his dwelling place among his people.
So what that golden box that you see in every Catholic church called the tabernacle, In fact, St. Patrick's tabernacle has two angels on it, although they're engraved on the front rather than sitting on the top. But that's really then reminiscent of the Holy of Holies.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, that's a fascinating description there, Ron. The tabernacle and the ark were moved quite a bit during the Israelites' wandering of the desert and during the conquest of Cana. Describe this, because that seems to be a little difficulty.
When the Israelites camped, it was kept in the Holy of Holies of the tabernacle. That is, the ark was. And there's no record of how many times the tabernacle and the ark were moved during the wanderings, the 40-year wanderings in the desert. After the Israelites had entered the Promised Land, and we'll be getting to that in a few sessions down the line, under Joshua's leadership, the ark was placed at Gilgal. That story is told in Joshua 4. Apparently, Joshua had it moved to Shechem, maybe pronounced, I suppose, different ways, and later to Shiloh, where it seems to have remained throughout the period of the Judges. We find this information in Joshua 18. Afterward, it was moved to Nob. That we find that in 1 Samuel 21. And later still to Gibeon. 1 Kings 3:4 tells us that. And during the wars with the Philistines, it was captured for a while, and we'll tell that story later, but it was returned to the Jews after 9 months. That story is told in 1 Kings 4. And it rested at some other places for about 80 years, and then finally brought to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gethite, where it remained till David placed it in a more elaborate tent or tabernacle. I read at Mount Sinai, but it probably was Mount Sinai. There it remained until it was placed in Solomon's temple. And when Solomon built his temple to replace the tabernacle, portions of the tabernacle were preserved as mementos in the room of the temple. In other words, they kept the old tent.
Okay.
They didn't need it anymore, but it was very sacred to them, and they kept it for quite a few years after that. And then the ark was hidden or destroyed at the fall of the temple of Jerusalem in 586 B.C., and it's never been found again. And we'll tell that story, of course, in some detail when we get to it.
Okay. What was that famous movie with Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
Or something like that? There are all kinds of stories, aren't there, about what happened to the ark, that it's still in existence, supposedly.
There's a little bit of that story of the Raiders of the Lost Ark are true. In addition to there being an ark, we know there was an ark. You have Nazis running all over the place in that movie. And that really was something. Himmler, who was the head of the SS, was very cult, very much into cult types of things. And he established, in fact, an agency within the SS with archaeologists in it who were to go out and find certain kinds of relics and artifacts and this, that, and the other, which they thought would legitimize their whole Nazi organization. And so they actually did have a group of SS Nazis who were going out trying to find some of these artifacts.
Really? Like the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, I'm not sure that was one of them, but it could have been. been the kind of thing they would have been looking for, the Holy Grail. And, and I think one of them, if I recall right, one of them's about the Grail too, isn't it? One of the Indiana
movies.
Jones.
I'm not sure.
So there's a little bit of truth to that.
Yeah. Well, okay, God occupied the tabernacle or the tent that was so detailed described just now after it was built. Tell us about this, that God coming to occupy the tent or the tabernacle.
The design of the tabernacle is an earthly representation of the heavenly temple. The book of Exodus ends with the building of the tabernacle. When the work was finally finished, all the people watched as God took up residence. And here's how it's described in Exodus 40. Quote, "Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud abode upon it. And the glory of the Lord filled the temple or the tabernacle. Throughout all their journeys, whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the people of Israel would go forward. But if the cloud was not taken up, then they did not go forward onward till the day that it was taken up. For throughout all their journeys, the cloud of the Lord was upon the tabernacle by day, and fire was in it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel. This again is the Shekinah, which is the idea of the presence of the Lord. And this smoke is symbolizing the presence of the Lord among them.
And at night, fire.
Yeah, so they could see it.
Okay. I've really forgotten a lot of these details, and it's really interesting to me to call them as you describe them so graphically. Wasn't the high priest, Ron, the only one allowed in the Holy of Holies?
Yes. If I recall right, prior to that, Moses did go in from time to time to speak directly to God. And God would, give him messages and go out to tell the people this and that and the other. If I recall right, also, whenever he was in God's presence, he would light up.
His face,
yes. And so when he'd come out, he'd be all lit up, and all the people would be frightened. So Moses had to put a veil over his head a good part of the time. But going back to your question, yes, the high priest was the only one allowed in the Holy of Holies. That is the inner sanctum, the part of the tabernacle was 15 by 15 by 15 cube, and where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. Once a year on the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur, the high priest passed through the veil or the curtain which separated the two rooms. And that is, separated the holy room from the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. The Ark was God's throne in his dwelling place in the tabernacle. And God's presence and glory resided over the Ark from the mercy seat located between the statues of the cherubim or angels attached to the lid of the Ark. God didn't reside in the Ark itself, but at least, obviously we know God's everywhere and all that kind of thing, but again, that's an analogical way, of conceiving of God, a human way, so we can understand God a little bit better. It kind of personalizes God. But nonetheless, the mercy seat was God's throne among the Israelites, and from the mercy seat he spoke to Moses and other leaders of Israel. For example, Joshua later on, who was Moses' successor. The high priest had to shield his eyes when he entered the Holy of Holies, because no man shall see me and live. And this is where God met with Moses. And we find this story, these stories, in both Exodus 25 and in Leviticus 16.
That's interesting that between the two golden angels on the top of the ark, this space is called the mercy seat. And it's certainly a beautiful description later on, New Testament, when John says God is love, and mercy is love at the sight of great need. So it's almost a prediction of the definition to come in the New Testament of God's love for all of us, concern for all of us. Well, probably one of the most well-known stories is the story of the golden calf, and shows how fickle and back and forth the Israelites were, no matter how much they said, we will be God's people and follow his commandments. They're pretty much like all of us, very frail and very easily led off the path. When Moses was up on the mountain of Sinai to get instructions about the ark, what were the people and the tabernacle, what were the people doing when they got impatient down at the bottom of Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb?
Well, in fact, they got so impatient and tired of waiting that when Moses was in communion with God for 40 days on the top of Mount Sinai, they pressured Moses' brother Aaron, who had been put in charge, in his absence, to allow them to build a golden calf to worship out of the golden earrings that the people had. Aaron also had an altar built before the calf and allowed the Israelites to make offerings with which to worship. God clues Moses in. He's up there on the mountain, you see, and God warns him what's going on before he descended the mountain. And God was so angry with the people for their faithlessness that he planned to destroy them and replace them with Moses' descendants. The faithless people had broken their covenant that they had recently made with God. In fact, they'd even approved of it, I think, three times, if I recall right. We'll do this, you know. In a sense, this has been called the Israelites' original sin.
Never heard that.
However, Moses pleaded to God not to do this, saying, quote, "Why, O Lord, should your wrath blaze up against your own people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with such great power and with so strong a hand? Why should the Egyptians say, 'With evil intent he brought them out that he might kill them in the mountains and exterminate them from the face of the earth'? Let your blazing wrath die down." This is Moses telling God, cool it, you know. "Relent in punishing your people." Moses, of course, was in effect telling God that the Egyptians and other people would think he was a weak God if he couldn't even control his own people. And then Moses pleaded further by saying, quote, "Remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Israel," or that is Jacob, "and how you swore to them by your own self, saying, 'I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky in all this land that I promised. I will give your descendants as their perpetual heritage.' So the Lord relented in his punishment he had threatened to inflict on the people." That story is again told in Exodus.
Okay, so what happened after Moses came down from the mountain?
Well, when Moses got down from the mountain, he saw things for himself, and he was so angry that he threw the two stone tablets on the ground and smashed them to bits. And as Scott Hahn says of this event, quote, "Since God had already prepared him for the golden calf, what Moses saw must have been much worse than simple idolatry. But the smashed tablets were a good symbol of the covenant broken. Then Moses had the golden calf destroyed by having it ground down into powder, which was scattered on the water that the Israelites were forced to drink. After chastising Aaron for failing to control the people while he was gone, Moses called for help in restoring order. And the Levites responded to his call." They're the ones that remained faithful. "He told them to arm themselves and go through the camp, killing all those who were caught sinning." And it's recorded that about 3,000 persons were killed. This is found in Exodus 31:33.
All right, Ron, we're coming to the end of the program. It's a good description of Moses up to the mountaintop, getting the Ten Commandments, and then Aaron making the golden calf. And we'll take up that story and what happened when Moses came down from the mountain. So to our listening audience, we say now, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.